Senator Chris Murphy, always an honor and a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for doing it.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay, so Chris, my first question is on Hillary. Now that Joe Biden says no, and Hillary seems to be doing very well on Benghazi and some of the other contentious issues, is the field open to her now? Is she a sure thing?
I don't think anybody's ever a sure thing, but I certainly would put my money on Hillary Clinton being the Democratic nominee. I've endorsed her, and I think she's the best candidate of any of the actual or potential candidates that we have. I mean, you know, here's the thing. Ultimately, this is a media narrative, right? The big cable news networks need to keep this thing interesting from here until the election next November. So this week, Hillary Clinton's doing really well, but 2 weeks from now, Hillary Clinton's going to not be doing well, and then 2 weeks from then, she'll be doing well again. And ultimately, the cable news networks are going to sort of pump her up and then tear her down probably a half dozen more times, because that's ultimately what drives ratings. What really is going on here is that voters are going to wait to make up their mind until they really have the ability and time to focus on this election, which will be in the primaries during the weeks before the vote, and then for the general election next September and October. So, a lot of this really doesn't matter other than what gets ratings. For voters, they're going to make up their minds when they're ready. And for many of them, that won't be until next fall.
You're exactly right, I'm sure. I have asked you this question before, but I can't help asking you this. You know, you have all the requisites as a politician. You know, you're handsome enough, you're tall enough, you're certainly bright enough, you're young enough. What if she taps you on the shoulder and calls you and says, Chris, I want you to be my vice presidential candidate?
I tell myself all those things in the mirror every morning, so it's nice to get affirmation from someone other than the mirror. No, I have absolutely no interest in that job or any other job than the one I have, and for two reasons. I mean, first, I'm only 3 years into being a U.S. senator from the state that I love, that I grew up in, that my grandparents, great-grandparents all grew up in. So this is the most amazing job I could ever get. And, I also have, little kids. I've got a, a 7-year-old and a soon-to-be 4-year-old at home, and it's hard enough to do with this job where I go back and forth from Washington to Connecticut every week. I can't imagine how much harder that gets if you're doing anything more important than this.
I gotta say that what you just said really rung a bell with me, and that is children. Now, here we have predictions that this is going to be the hottest year on record by far. And all the scientific community is saying, global warming, and then they're the deniers. But I always say in these commentaries and things, doesn't anybody think about the children and where we're going?
Yeah, it's funny you frame it that way. I was actually at a hearing on the Paris climate talks that are happening later this year, and that's exactly how I phrased it. I said, as a parent, I have a lot of scary moments, the first time you go to the emergency room, the first day of school. But one of the really scary moments for me as a parent was the day that the climate change bill in 2009 died in the United States Senate, and it appeared that we weren't going to actually ever pass anything in the Congress to try to do something substantive about this global catastrophe. That was really scary to think that, my kids, who I hope are going to be alive at the end of the century, could potentially witness global temperatures that are 6 to 8 degrees higher, sea levels that are 23 inches higher than today, a million species that might not be on the planet by the end of this century that are there today. That's really, really scary. And I'm, very, very supportive of the president coming to Paris and getting a real meaningful binding commitment. But unfortunately, he's going to have to do it without the support of the Republican Congress.
So he's got children. You've got children. I have grandchildren now who I'm concerned about. But what about the guys who, just every time there's a proposal, see it as you have this knee-jerk reaction to know this is going to cost us money? Don't they have children?
Yeah, I it's hard for me to get in the heads of the climate deniers. I think many of them sincerely, don't believe that this is ultimately a problem that we can solve, and they've been dragged down that path by pseudo scientists that are paid for by the you know, big oil and gas companies. So it's hard for me to understand where they're coming from, given that 99% of peer-reviewed science says only one thing. You know, but of course, you know, their argument is that ultimately it's going to cost us money. It's going to hurt our economy. But in the Northeast, you know, this isn't theoretical for us. You know, we've been living under a cap-and-trade regime, a multi-state cap-and-trade regime now for a decade or more. And what we've seen is that carbon emissions from the Northeast have been reduced by one-third. That's a really impressive number. And electric bills, although it doesn't feel like it, have come down to the point where the average homeowner is saving hundreds of dollars because of this cap-and-trade regime. So in the Northeast, we've seen no price increase because of cap and trade and tremendous carbon reduction. And it's not theoretical. It's practical. It's working.
Chris, I recently had a note from a listener who wanted to know exactly what is cap and trade.
So cap and trade is pretty simple. It basically says that, let's say we applied it to the entire country. We are going to cap emissions, carbon emissions from this country. We're going to apply that cap to our electricity distributors because those are the entities that are really in the position to determine how much pollution comes out of our power plants. And then we will allow for those power distributors to pay for the right to pollute. And they would essentially buy the right to pollute from somebody else. So they'd pay somebody else not to pollute so that they could pollute. But
and the ones that, I'm sorry, Chris.
Keep a certain amount of carbon, a limit on the amount of carbon that we emit.
Now, the ones that they're buying from are the ones who have extra. Is that the idea?
Right. So if one particular utility had dramatically reduced its carbon emissions by, let's say, helping their consumers, their homeowners, invest in energy efficiency, they could then sell the credits for the lower amounts of carbon in their system to somebody else who hadn't yet made those investments. And so what it allows for is the market to essentially decide who pollutes and who doesn't while setting an overall cap on the amount of pollution that comes out of the market. And what it'll do is it'll allow the market to decide, do we invest in fuel, in energy efficiency? Do we invest in wind? Do we invest in solar? The market, the electricity distributors, will make those decisions rather than the government making the decision, okay, I'm going to subsidize this particular technology or this particular intervention. The market will do a better job of that.
It seems to me, and we only have a minute, but it seems to me that I like the cap part. I don't like the trade part.
Yeah, well, I think ultimately the trade part gives you flexibility. The trade part gives you flexibility to allow the market to decide what are the parts of the country that can invest more deeply in renewable energy and what parts can't. I mean, for instance, it would allow for the southwest part of the country to build big solar and perhaps to trade the credits to the Midwest that may still be more reliant on coal. So it allows for, I think, a recognition that there's going to be a differing pace of renewable energy investment all across this gigantic country while still keeping that cap so that we know that we're not polluting more than we ultimately have to.
It's always great to have Senator Chris Murphy. You started with us as a congressman. You've kept it up as a senator, and we all thank you for it. Chris, when you come back the next time, I want to talk to you about an old game we used to play called Capture the White Flag.
Sounds good.